Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Welcome to Talking Comics episode 274. I'm your host, Mara Wood, and I'm here with Bob Ryer.
Happy President's Day.
Steve Say.
Greetings.
And Joey Brugino.
Pew, 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 pew.
Very well done. Very well done.
That was my John Wick. That was my John Wick impression.
See it in theaters today. In a world.
So we're back for another week full of comics and comicking news and things like that. But I realized that we had talked about it, but we never really hit on it last week. The Lego Batman movie. I think it was one of those that were like, oh yeah, forgot about that movie coming out and that we had seen it. So I figured we'd start the show out with a little bit of our quick thoughts on Lego Batman. And I'll go first. I'll say that the trailers made the movie look amazing. I really enjoyed the trailers and the jokes they included there with that movie. It was fun. I don't like going to the theaters. I don't like movies.
Except when they're Star Wars.
I'll watch Star Wars, which really breaks Matt's heart because he's like all into the Oscar things, and I'm like, I don't care. Sorry.
Oh wow.
I can't sit there and watch those movies. Just can't, guys. I can't. So Lego Batman was the first time I'd been to the theater since Rogue One, which I had actually gone and seen 5 times.
Oh my gosh.
How is he in predicting the winners of the Oscars?
I don't remember this stuff.
Well, here. I think he's
pretty good.
There's a work going on, and if I win money.
Mm.
So if he wants to...
He does like to bet on these things, and it drives him crazy that, like, he's got one friend who's also into the Oscar stuff, and then he's got me. So
nice.
I'm sitting there going, like, I don't know any of these movies, so I choose A all down the line.
He should be talking to Bobby and Brian. For sure, yeah. Because
we usually do the Oscar parties and do trivia contests, which I won.
You always
twice in a row. Yeah. And always finish in the top like 4 or top 3.
I always finish on like, the pickings. Almost dead last.
Mm-hmm. You got to do your research. You got to look and see what the guilds pick. You know, the Directors Guild is a precursor of the Screen Actors Guild Awards.
Guys, I'm telling you guys, work.
Put it on Arrival or Lion. I'm telling you, those are the two, the dark horses right there. They're gonna.
Those are the ones
in.
that could win you, huh?
I'm thinking, La La Land. It's too buzzy. It's too buzzy right now. And
I wish that Arrival would get it because
Arrival is amazing. I just saw it this week.
I'm telling you, it's that little movie that could right there. La La Land.
But it never works out for me, man. Like that would be my horse in this race, and I'd never win. They never come in.
Yeah.
They're like off eating carrots somewhere.
Yeah. They jumped over the rail and went to the stands.
Yeah. The horse just like, meh.
I'm done.
Nay.
Nay.
All right. Sorry.
But you know what? You know.
So Lego Batman.
Yeah. I don't think this one was up for an Oscar nom, was it?
Best animated? Maybe.
I don't know.
Song?
I don't think so.
Does it have a song in it?
Everything is awesome.
No, they had a different one.
It does. It has a Batman song that he sings, like a dark tune.
Yeah, like a
about his marriage.
But it was cute. I mean, I liked the Lego movie. I thought Batman was cool in it, and I thought this was a sweet movie about family. Mm. But as I was telling you guys off air, theaters are so comfortable. and you're just sitting there and you're just happy. You got popcorn in your belly and some Dr. Pepper. And so I fell asleep during part of the movie. And, you know, part of that goes back to late nights studying and it was just a dark room. So I did miss some plot stuff that I think was important. But
yes, but Mara, I will share in your sleepiness as I too fell asleep during Lego Batman for the last 20 minutes.
Wow.
You know, I used to get so mad at my dad for falling asleep when he took us to movies, but I think it's an adult thing. I think adults just fall asleep during movies.
I cry during movies, so I don't really know the sleepy thing.
I look at home in my regular chair in a bathrobe with snacks. I fall asleep 30% of the time watching movies. I have only fallen asleep in a theater, not counting like a little kid at the drive-in, once, and it was devastating. It was during Christmas 35 years ago. I went to my comic store and they were all going to go see Dune, the David Lynch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I was tired from work. We went to a 10 o'clock show, which is going to end at like 1 in the morning.
Right.
Went to the theater and I fell asleep like 30 minutes in. I was awoken by giant sandworms and screaming sound effects. It was like, ah! I've never seen that movie again since. I was so traumatized. I've never gone back to it.
Have you ever actively tried to fall asleep during a movie?
No.
Like the movie was just so bad that you were like, I'd rather take a nap instead.
Look, I saw...
No, I would sneak and go next door to another movie. That's
the way I would go to the... For The Hunt for Red October. I was sitting in my chair with my eyes just tightly shut like, come on.
Wow, that's a good picture.
I did that for Matrix. And it worked. I did fall asleep.
What? What?
Guys, I don't like movies very much.
Yeah, but the second or third one, yes.
I don't know. The first one, yeah. I don't know. I
fell asleep during Peter Jackson's King Kong.
I fell asleep during The Hobbit. One of them.
I didn't see that movie. I vividly remember the one movie I fell asleep during is that movie. And then I tried to watch it again and I fell asleep again. There's something about that movie that just knocks me right out.
Look, it takes longer in Peter Jackson's King Kong to get to Skull Island than the original King Kong is in total. Nice. That's a problem.
Yeah. I have tried to watch Sleepless in Seattle I don't know how many times.
Oh, I love that movie.
Never finished it because I kept falling asleep.
Oh.
All right. Did anyone else watch Lego Batman besides Steve and I?
I did.
Okay.
I did. I liked it too. I really liked the Easter egg-iness of it and just how many that montage of him going after all of like the C&D list villains was incredible. Probably my favorite part of the entire movie. I did like the emphasis on family, but I had a really, really good time with it. I do feel like part of the reason why I started to fall asleep, other than it was my first time out of the house since the hospital, that it began to meander a little bit or get kind of consumed by the joke of what it was. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one thing to feature Batman in a Lego movie. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to have him on an hour and 40 minute long adventure. And I have to admit that part of it was getting a little stale for me by the end. I still think it's one of the best Batman movies that's out there.
Wow.
No, it is. It definitely is. Even just for all of the nods and all of the just how clever it is in delivering some of the jokes and also playing off of like the Batman mystique and broody attitude and stuff of that lent to some really, you know, truly delicious comedy. Even after it was done, like I kind of walked away from it thinking like I kind of like the Lego movie, like the original one, just slightly more. I don't know why I'm comparing the two. It's a stupid thing to do. But, you know, I had a really good time with it. I think that anybody that goes to see it is going to have a really good time just laughing their asses off at some of the jokes.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of our sister podcasts, Talking Movies, actually did an interview with Chris McKay, who's the director of Lego Batman.
What?
Yeah. I'm like, what?
Ryan!
So if you're interested in this movie or have seen it and want to know more about it, definitely check out Talking Movies and check out that interview with Chris McKay. Wow. So I was like, oh, that's pretty cool when I heard about it. Yeah. So I was like, yeah.
It makes up for all their Brian De Palma coverage. No, I'm sorry, Brian.
I don't know.
We have divergent opinions on Mr. De Palma. He argued about them massively back in the Fanboy Remix days, but that's a great get for them.
Yeah, definitely.
I will definitely listen to that one.
All right, so let's jump into some comics. We got a lot of good stuff this week. Surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, we all read Batwoman.
So yeah.
I think it's the Bennett. Yep. The Bennett
Epting.
Draw.
It was Epting for me is what it was.
Yeah. So before we go into, you know, before I let Bob hit the ground running, doesn't Betty Brettweiser usually do Epting's colors?
I mean, like, in terms of all the stuff he did with Ed Brubaker, yeah.
Okay, okay.
But not all the time, but yeah, usually, because a lot of it was the Cap stuff and mm-hmm. some of the, did he do Fatale? Was he on Fatale?
No, on Velvet, yes.
Oh, Velvet is the one I'm thinking of. Yeah. Yeah. So usually Betty B. Okay. But
all right. So that was throwing me off while I was reading it. It's like something's totally different. Something's different here. So Bob, why don't you go ahead and tell us what Batwoman Rebirth is all about?
It is about everything that Batwoman has been since the very beginning. To me, this is the perfect sort of rebirth issue to get people caught up, where if all they saw were the detective issues, or maybe had dropped in to see her in her guest appearances somewhere, you get the entire story of Kate Kane from her beginnings as a young girl, from the stories from Elegy, the old detective books. You get caught up really quickly on her relationships with her father, with her friends, with her lovers, with Batman, with the world around her, and told in a way that, having read them, did not feel repetitive. It felt reaffirming. Mm-hmm. The artwork is laid out in beautiful mosaics and montages. It is dark and yet happy at once. We've read a lot of Rebirth issues. I think this is near the top of the heap at how you try to do this that gets you looking backwards and forwards at the same time.
Hmm. I agree.
Well said.
I agree.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, I'll throw a word in. I mean, the issue is positively gorgeous, and I just want to give some props to the colorist, Jeremy Cox, mm-hmm. because there are... Like the book, for me anyway, visually looks one way, has very much that Fatale look to it for the most part. But then toward the back, you get these, like, you know, beautiful one-page spreads where the colors almost make it look like different artistry. Mm-hmm. And it gives it almost this like poster collection look as you go through like these final pages. It's like a good 5 or 6 pages towards the end that looked really good. But yeah, I mean, I talked to a couple of people about the issue on Twitter, and they were asking me if I thought that it was too much of a rehash of the old stuff. And I don't think so. Like, I think it's a, first of all, a great rebirth issue as far as reintroducing the character and getting you caught up to where she's been and what she's doing and what her intentions are going forward and stuff like that. But there's also, you know, taking cues from a time in her history when things were really good and rich with character and story, and you're going to use that as your springboard as opposed to maybe some of the stuff that came later or more, you know, in her more current runs, because those things are just, they were done and they're over. Let's go back to what really worked for us.
We get to see her twin sister again. We're diving
like,
back,
you know,
into
there's
that.
Characters coming back. There's like a little preview in the back of the issue where they show you, like, you know, 4 things to come. And those are all familiar and exciting things if you went back and you read Elegy. And it's a reason for people to go back and pick that up because that's a really good book.
Oh, yeah. Iconic.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I thought this was a slam dunk as far as, you know, giving the fans what they want and making it feel new enough to like a new reader where the content would be engaging and exciting to see her doing her thing. Mm-hmm. And the art, I'll just say it again, just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous.
I kind of not felt the total opposite on some of those things, but I did feel like a lot of it was recappy. Mm-hmm. But then I remembered that this was a Rebirth issue, you know, and it's been a while since like I'd read a DC Rebirth one. I felt like we'd been in the cycle and I was like, why are we like recapping stuff? And then I remembered like all of those Rebirth issues that we read last May were like recapping and kind of reframing. Mm-hmm. But I like the character, you know, and I like those stories that you're talking about. So I didn't mind as much. Right. And I could imagine, you know, the kind of same way that I was with, you know, a Wonder Woman or Green Arrow or something like that, how those Rebirth issues for someone who didn't know the character could catch up and could be compelled to pick up some of that old stuff and get excited for the new stuff would feel, you know. So in that sense, I agree that it's an effective Rebirth issue, no matter how rehashy it might be. And then again, anything with Steve Epting's name on it, let alone Bennett and Tynan, you know, like yeah. I'm in for. Yeah. So do we know if this is a monthly or biweekly?
I think it's a monthly.
Yeah, it's a monthly.
Okay. See, I thought it was, yeah. I did like that there was a quick Wonder Woman appearance from her New 52 DAs. When that was the best Wonder Woman we were getting, or best representation of Wonder Woman we were getting at that time. At least I felt that way. I'm definitely really looking forward to this book. I was, as soon as they were announcing it, I was like, I know I'm going to buy it. I'll know I'll enjoy it. Even if I don't enjoy it, I'll probably shut up and say I will anyway. I like Batman nice. That much.
Now you don't have to worry about
that.
I think it's off to a good start.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
It's got a lot of promise, and again, it just kind of reaffirms who that character is and gets me excited for it. Like, I'm already kind of thinking, like, I kind of want to dig back in the issues and look for, well, I enjoyed New 52 Batwoman at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, there were some good things in there, for sure.
And so I kind of feel like I want to dig back in there. And,
oh, that beginning arc with, what the hell was it called? Like, where the people were all drowning?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember the name of it, but man, yeah, those first like two or three arcs were fantastic. Mm-hmm. I don't remember where it started to veer off for me, but it was definitely later in the run.
Well, it when it changed creative teams over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Maggie Sawyer.
Yeah. Thing. The terrible decision they made. anyway.
Let's not be another offender, DC. Let's not do that again.
Yeah, they're having all these problems. You know, even Legos couldn't save Batman movies. Man, I kind of want Batwoman. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so...
Is she in any of the cartoons yet? Any of the animated films?
Yeah, Batwoman shows up in one of the animated movies. Oh, I watched the Justice League Dark animation. Uh-huh. It was good. It was one of the better ones, for sure. It's a little slow in the beginning, and then but once it gets going, it gets going. It's got some really sweet Zatanna moments as well. Okay. She's a beast in that movie.
Magically be a beast.
No, she
be Zatanna.
It is very clear that she is the top dog in like the most powerful person of the lot in that movie, and she's got some really cool stuff. But check it out. It's worth watching.
Nice. Steve, you also got caught up on Superman this past week.
Oh, Superman. Mm-hmm. Superman continues to be so good. I'm hanging out with Superman in this whole Rebirth thing. We're 17, 18 issues, including the annual deep. And I got every one of them, which is like unheard of. I've never collected Superman for this long. And so... where I went from was Superman 14 to 17. And 14 to 16 is an arc called Multiplicity. Little shout out to the Michael Keaton comedy.
No, it's a shout out to Multiversity.
Both.
Yes.
I'm making my own shout out because okay. I love that damn movie. It's so
Who was your favorite of the Michael Keaton versions?
Oh, God.
The aggressive fellow?
Probably
the
aggressive
one. Okay, yeah.
Probably the aggressive one if I had to. He was pretty damn funny. But anyway.
Anyway.
So there's a threat because, of course, there is. And they're going around deleting Supermen from the different Earths and the different dimensions and stuff. And Superman proper, whichever one you want to choose, that there are multiple of them running around in this new DC Rebirth universe. But one of them is going to put a stop to it. So I know that I've heard of this thing before, this vessel. But this thing is just so damn cool. You know what the Ultima Thule is?
I vaguely remember that.
Okay, well, let me remind you. All right. You guys know my personality from listening to the show. You know how much I love music. Listen to this stuff. The Ultima Thule is an extra dimensional boat made of frozen music created.
Yes,
by
from Multiversity.
Yeah. By the monitors to explore and travel the multiverse. Its capabilities allow it to vibrate at different frequencies in order to access each of the 52 known worlds occupying the same space, which are separated only by their own pitches. Oh, my God. Like, I want to ride in that thing so bad. That's amazing. So Superman gets all of the Superman onto this thing and is like, we got to figure this out because these things are coming for everybody. They're looking for Kenan or Kenan? Kenan Kong. So they're looking for him and they're taking everybody out. Going to all of the different Earths and gathering everybody, there's these like really cool, like I call them like little sliver panels where it's like four panels stacked on top of one another of all these crazy worlds. You get to see all these different renditions of these iconic characters, like all the different Wonder Womans, all the different Green Lanterns, and they're male, female, alien, animal, they're everything. And it's really, really cool to watch them gather into one space. And The whole arc is just like really cool and really engaging and very energetic, and it moves and all the Superman are working together, and like the resolution's really cool, and I just loved it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was awesome. This series continues to just be a lot of fun. And then
noticed something on the cover.
What's that?
Just as Superwoman's. Look, it's Superman, and the S shield is after the N, so it's Superman's on the cover.
Not see that. What Bob's talking about is Superman number 17, which is a new story. It feels like a one-off to me, called Dark Harvest. It says, what monster lurks in the Dead Man's Swamp?
Yeah,
this is kind of like a... almost like an off issue, like a weird little Goonies like thing of John and his neighbor Kathy, kind of winding up in this. They go in search of these footprints that are leading into the woods, and they see this like weird apparition or like figure, and it, in my estimation, like it puts them almost on like a psychedelic horror trip throughout the night, and they go on this huge adventure with like just shape-shifting cows, and they're barfing torrents of milk into the house that's washing them down the stairs. Things are ripping open the roof. They're like hanging for dear life, and it's just, there's so much going on in this issue. The art is absolutely spectacular, and it's a cool like vacation issue. If like you just got done reading a three-part arc, before that there was another big story, and now we're just going to tell you like this little almost like Tales from the Crypt, or you know, Are You Afraid of the Dark style tale featuring these cool kid characters. And I really like John. Like I like John as Superboy, as all around.
Mm-hmm. He's wonderful.
Yeah. And Sebastian Fumara and Dave Stewart on colors. No shit. Okay, sorry. There you go. So it's gorgeous. I rest my case.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of John,
Yeah.
He's got his own little book out this week.
Yeah, he does.
Super
Sons. Super Sons. Mm-hmm. Do you want to hear it? Do you want to lead in to it, Mara?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out. So it's inevitable that Damian and John will pair up over and over again. Look, Damian is one of those characters where I don't like to read him by himself, but I love him in context with another character. And he and John work wonderfully together. John is so down to earth about things and so just trying to figure out who he is. And Damian shows up and he's full of confidence and just bragging about himself and his abilities and putting John down the whole time. But for some reason, this dynamic is working out for the two of them. It's basically just the first issue of their team up. You know, John goes to school. Damien's there making fun of him about it. We get a little bit of Damien in the Batcave with Bruce and Alfred and that family dynamic, as well as John's dynamic with Lois and Clark. I was looking forward to this book ever since that Superman had the crossover, not crossover, but guest appearance of Bruce and Damien. This, I think, it's like they wrote it for me, to be honest. It's pitch perfect in my opinion.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go. I didn't read it, so go.
Oh, okay. This was so awesome. I read this directly after reading Superman, that issue that I just spoke about. So like I was totally in John mode when I rolled into this, and I love the bickering chemistry, how they're totally playing off the Batman Superman squabbles from over the years and applying it to these two kid characters, but doing it as kids puts a different light, kind of a different spin on the pecking order between the two. Mm-hmm. And this book is like alive in terms of color and art and imagination, and them being at the school, like surrounded by all these kids, having to kind of, at least with John, having to curb his powers and his instincts to, you know, he sees people getting picked on or he gets picked on. Naturally, he's going to want to do something about it, but he knows that he can't expose himself. And it's that whole thing over again. But I don't know, it feels fresh and fun to me. I'm definitely going to keep picking this up. Peter J. Tomasi just has such an incredible handle. He has for years on these characters. You know, he is them to an extent. And I'm just looking forward to seeing how long this hangs out and how often it comes out, because this is immediately the kind of book that, like, this is added to the pull list.
Yeah.
Every issue gets, like, I just collected the Robin Son of Batman run. That was, I got the two hardcovers the last time I was in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I started going through that. And I'm liking it better the second time around, but oh my God, that first issue of that run is so incredibly complicated and dense. And like, that was what turned me off of it the first time I read it. And then I read it when I was in the hospital. And I liked it better. But man, was it still one of the most daunting reads I've had from DC.
Ooh, that's not good then.
No, this was a lot easier to kind of get into the flow of. And a lot of that is, you know, the dueling personalities. It's just, it's such a fun chemistry to read. And everybody on the book has a really great handle on it. So yeah, this was super fun.
All right. So... You're gonna have to give me some background on what Wildstorm is. Apparently, there's
you're asking the wrong person.
Wrong person. My understanding, and forgive me, y'all. There's some things in comics I just don't care about, nor have I researched. And my understanding is that Wildstorm is an old imprint, from DC.
Well, it's Jim Lee from back in the coming out of the Image days.
Okay.
And when he went to DC, sort of brought that with him. Warren Ellis, who wrote this the Wildstorm, wrote the old characters.
Okay.
back in the day, which, and that day is not that long ago, but even that, it's, I think it's 20 years back.
John Burkle, one of our writers, did a piece on Stormwatch and Warren Ellis last week, I think. So if you want more, you can check out that article.
Plug there.
Nice. So
thank you, Joey.
So what
so
is
Steve?
This issue one?
All right. Well, here's the deal. I've been talking a little bit online about, and Mara, you and I talked about this, about like trying to change up my pull list a little bit and start trying things again, because I've gotten to this kind of cruise control part with everything being so crazy. It's just easier to stick with what I know. But, you know, for the sake of keeping things fresh and coming back to the show and talking about different things, I want to also be able to offer the peoples some stuff. So I don't know how extensive my opinion's going to be on it. I apologize, but you know, buy the ticket, take the ride.
You'll be fine.
So, so Wildstorm came out. Wildstorm is Warren Ellis and John Davis Hunt of the Clean Room fame. And I got to admit, he's the reason I picked up this book. I do like me some Warren Ellis from time to time, but typically I read an issue of something that he does, and then I just hang back and I wait till it's collected, and then I debate some more. That's just my pattern with his stuff, not all stuff, but it's usually how it happens. So Wildstorm came out, and I saw people talking about it online. I saw people tweeting about it. I saw like early reviews of it and pages, and I'm like, oh man, that's really pretty. Like, it's John Davis Hunt doing his thing. And if he's not doing Clean Room right now, like, I like him enough to follow him onto another book without really knowing very much. And so what I got with Wildstorm that I can take away from it is that Wildstorm is a kind of like shadow government organization. Yes,
it's a shadow organization.
All right, it's
whether it's the government.
All right, we'll leave the government. To say, strike that. Erase that from the record. Draw a line through it. And so people from this organization, like, they're outside in the city and they're kind of surveying an area of where they want to launch their mission statement for their company and whatnot, or what they do. And a mogul, a tech mogul,
Jacob Marla.
Yeah. Who is, what would you equate him to? Is he like the Bill Gates of the Wildstorm verse?
Yeah, he's bigger than the product he sells.
Okay.
In essence. So, yeah, that's a good analogy.
All right. Maybe he's the Steve Jobs.
Okay. Either way, same
either
sort of
way. Either way, he gets it.
He's the Jack LaLanne of Nine.
Right.
Remembers that reference.
So I remember Jack LaLanne.
Okay.
So he gets into some business and winds up falling out of a window like you do. And a character on the ground who is trying to gain funding from her.
Angela Spica.
Angela Spica, her constituents. Thank you, Bob. My brain is.
It's written right here. I'm looking at it, so it's easy.
So she looks up. She's kind of despondent at the moment, but she looks up and she sees him falling out. And out of nowhere, there's this like super cool transformation that she goes through. And she kind of like Predator Iron Man's her way
cyborg
up into the
flying
air,
suit weirdness,
and catches his ass and throws him back into the office. And it's like a really cool like two or three pages of this really cinematic robotic like glasses shattering everywhere. I marvel at like how somebody actually sits there and has the patience to draw all those pieces and everything. And so character thinks that she's doing a good deed, flies away. And it turns out that now that she's exposed herself, Dude Man wants to know about who she is and the tech. And we're going to, you know, eventually, I would imagine, find a way to weaponize this thing and do what villains do.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the gist. Like I said, I came for the artwork. I stayed for the artwork for the issue. I have to admit that I was a little intimidated when I looked on the inside cover. And there's a numbering system with a 1 highlighted through 24. So the idea of committing to a 24-issue story for something that I'm only feeling kind of lukewarm on in terms of, like, likability of characters. Like, I walked away being intrigued by, like, maybe 3 of the you know, 8 or 9 people that we were introduced to. Maybe it just needs more time. We're just, you know, giving everybody a walk on, like a page or two to introduce themselves. But cool little world. I just, this is one of those things where, like, I'm going to have to hear from somebody that it gets bigger and more interesting before committing to it at you know, $3.99 a pop.
I feel the same way. I did find it interesting. Thought of it instantly as trade weight material. Angela, I really enjoy as a character. Her sort of boss from International Operations, Miles Craven, which is just a great kind of name. It's those two. It is certainly Jacob and what he's got going on. I don't think we know who the good and bad people are yet.
Right.
Their actions are going to tell us that eventually, I think. In a way, not only because of the art, I am reminded of Clean Room. And that we're setting up this world with layers and there's weird everywhere. And until it settles a little, you're not going to really know where the storyline went. But with Clean Room, you were grabbed instantly. Mm-hmm. The first couple of pages were, I need to know where this comes from, where it's going, and you were just instantly involved. This is, I think, a slower burn because it is 24.
Right.
So we'll have to see. But I would want to see a second issue before making a decision. I haven't read a whole lot of Warren Ellis. He is dense. I wish I knew more about these characters from before, but that may hurt more than help.
I would probably, I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, like, I really like John Davis Hunt enough that I might follow on to another issue or two just because I really do. I want to support his stuff, and I really do like his artwork. He's become, you know, one of my favorite artists within the last year or so. And I mean, the Warren Ellis stories that I've read typically have been very good. So maybe I just need to have patience and shut up.
Did you notice the weird little Easter egg that Pris is where Priscilla's wearing the shirt as she wanders through Times Square?
Yes.
That says Tallulah.
Yep.
Because Warren Ellis and Kelly Sue DeConnick are very close friends.
That's awesome.
So she's wearing a Tallulah shirt for no particular reason, I guess, except for that.
Another little Easter egg is if you go all the way back to the first couple of Talking Comics podcasts, I reviewed Grifter #1.
Ooh.
For when the DC New 52 came out. And Grifter is a Wildstorm character, I think. he's in there.
I'm sure one of these characters is going to turn out to be Grifter.
I don't know. I don't even think he has a page. I think there's just a preview of him standing on a rooftop somewhere or the side of a building. I don't know. He looks pretty damn cool, though.
There you go.
All right.
So, yeah, Wildstorm. I don't know. Wildstorm #1.
Okay. Bob, what about Ultimates 2 #4?
Wow. Speaking of densely packed books.
Golly.
Yeah. We are coming off of our end of last issue where Master Order and Lord Chaos have murdered the Living Tribunal.
Amazing.
Which doesn't seem possible. And they have now turned into a character called Logos.
Nice.
Which is kind of the new version of the Living Tribunal. They've turned on, you know, the new Galactus because he's sort of the representation of all that was and changed, and they want things back their own way since they were so constrained by Eternity and the original Tribunal. The Ultimates, meanwhile, are on Galactus's world ship with the Anti-Man, who's seen better days himself.
Yeah.
We have a whole new group, though they've been around in this series for a while, but really taking a front and center role here, since the Ultimates are supposedly broken up after all that happened the last time with incursions and whatever. It's the Troubleshooters, who are all these old new universe characters come back around again from Justice and DP7. And here's a book that is addressing at the top level of crazy outre stuff, along with Silver Surfer, the change in the universes, what's around, what's not, the snowing shards of the old universes. This is as cosmic a book as you can imagine. It's Al Ewing doing a fabulous job as he had from the start here. Travel Foreman's artwork, the colors by, and I can't even read it right now because I have my magnifying glass somewhere. I can't reach it, and I can't find the page. It's someone named Brown. We'll just go with Brown because I can actually
Dan
read
Brown.
Dan Brown. It is Dan Brown. Okay. Colors really help to sell this story. It's dense. If you walked into Ultimate Squared number 4, you'd have no clue what was going on. The little blurb in the front where Galactus is telling you the story ain't helping.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. But it's just
on Ultimates 2.
It's an amazing, amazing story if you've been following through. My one regret about all this is the sort of story that the Fantastic Four would have been telling.
But is it scratching that itch for you in some way? Is at least
yes, it is. Oh, yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah. And Al Ewing, whose work I began following with Mighty Avengers in the midst of Infinity? Yes, that was Infinity back when the events just so run together. Mm. Yes, because I, as much as I love the ground level stuff, you want to see something bigger.
Cosmic level, something out there.
Yeah, and this is as cosmic as you can get. What is everybody else thinking about Ultimate Squared?
I think I was the only other one who read it. I don't know. This is one of those books that I keep buying because I think it's so neat and so cool. But when I finish the issue, I'm like, well, I'm not sure what happened, but that was really cool. And, you know, that's enough for me. You know, I think this is one of those books where the payoff comes later. And it's going to need multiple reads once the arc is finished. So I'm in it for the long game. I'm going to keep reading it. I'm going to keep buying it. And once we get the story over, I'm really looking forward to rereading it.
Yeah. The team with America in the forefront is really interesting too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where last time around it was more Blue Marvel and T'Challa with some Carol stuff going on. America getting ready for her solo spot. And this book is really making it happen.
When the hell is that coming?
I think next month.
Yeah.
It's coming up.
I feel like I heard about that eons ago.
They announced it at some con, I think.
Mm.
We just talk about it every week.
Yeah. Anticipation. Okay, what about Hellcat? What's been going on with her?
Oh, Joey, you wanna start with this one?
Sure. So if you'll remember, at the end of issue, 50? At the end of issue 14, Patsy sneezes and there's just fish everywhere.
Right.
What?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's getting weird. So it turns out she's a little under the weather, and her sneezes make random things manifest out of nowhere. Huh. Right? So, you know, we have some moments where she'll sneeze and something will catch on fire, or she'll sneeze and a character will become a baby version of themselves, or she'll sneeze. Or she'll sneeze and a giant, manifestation of her deepest, darkest fears becomes a giant tiger, you know?
Mr. Sniffles.
And then that's pretty much what this issue is. You know, the kind of funny things that happen when Patsy sneezes and how they deal with it. Relatively self-contained in terms of kind of following the aftermath of the Black Cat stuff. We do have a nice little cliffhanger ending. I'm like, we say every time, this book is funny. It's sincere. It's got a life and a vibrancy to it that really nothing else has. It's Kate Leth and Brittany Williams and Rachel Rosenberg are just at the top of their game here, 15 issues in. I hope this series stays around forever. I don't know if it is or will, but I'm loving it.
Yeah, absolutely so, Joey. All of those things. It's charming, funny. It's heroic.
Yeah.
It's certainly heartfelt. And look, it had me sneezing halfway through the book. I mean, it's one of those things like when people yawn, you just start to get going. They at some point they're saying, well, maybe this was caused by her being infected somehow for being inside Bailey's magic TARDIS bag or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
The idea that Mr. Sniffles, her stuffed tiger, was something her mom gave her when she was sick, that now turns into this giant monster saber-tooth creature, sort of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man idea.
Right.
Just so clever. Little tiny Jubilee, the vampire girl.
It's adorable. There are just all these little gags that the conceit allows for, right? America shows up, and the gag with her is hilarious.
Hilarious, yes. We would spoil that one. That was awesome. And the cover, by the way, we should mention is Elsa Chartier from Unstoppable Wasp, and it's an all sneezy cover. Patsy in the middle with her box of Kleenex, and there are flaming boogers everywhere.
Oh,
<laughs> So gross. And stuff just going on. Just as you said, Joy, this is a book that is absolutely a delight every time out. Even when it's sad, as was number 8, which was my pick for best single issue of last year, it is so in character. When things change, it never feels like, oh, they're telling this because they have to, or it's a tie-in. No, it's Patsy being Patsy. Her supporting cast are all incredible, and they're always, always right there in your heart. So, yeah, let's hope for continued success for Pwaka.
I don't see it on the solicits for May.
We will be talking about that in a little later. But yes, that is something we're going to be yelling about in about a half hour.
Yeah.
What about Doctor Strange number 17?
I had my moments there with Doctor Strange as we neared the end of the magic falling apart arc, that it seemed like we had tread the same ground a couple of times. But boy, since the end of that arc, Jason Aaron, it's Fraser Irving on art this time around, magic has come back, and there are some problems. Wong has been kidnapped by a character called Mr. Misery. If your name is Mr. Misery, first of all, you can have trouble in school. You know, that's going to be a problem. But obviously, that's a bad guy.
My mom said I can't come over to your house.
Yes, exactly. You can't come over to Misery's house. And they're trying to Doctor Strange and what's left of his team, which is now Zelma Stanton, our librarian from the Bronx, as she says, well, I've called for the 17 Avengers teams. And Doctor Strange is, well, make sure you talk to every last Captain America, Wolverine, and Iron person. Jason Aaron has made this book cosmic and weirdly funny issue after issue as weird things are in the kitchen. Oh, don't go past the kitchen, Zelma. We don't know what's going on. Yeah, I think Wong left the tentacles out. It's just brilliantly done. We have Nazi ninja vampires in this issue. Incredible layouts of the artwork by Fraser Irving. Nicely tuned story that has really picked up the pace as magic has come back. The story arc has more forward momentum. And I know there are a lot of Doctor Strange books out right now because there was that little movie that came out last year. Yeah. So the character may be overextended considering how many times he's been canceled over the years. But this book by Jason Aaron is really, really done well. And I hope he writes it forever.
But
in the May solicits,
he's not. Issue number 20 is the last one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's cover one more Marvel book before we talk about the solicits.
Okay.
Because I definitely think we need to hit on Mighty Thor. Number 16, which is the second. We'll keep it very brief. We're second issue in
part two.
An arc. Yes. As Guardians versus Shi'ar. Pretty cool.
So much fun stuff. Yeah. And again, talking about parts of the Shi'ar lore we hadn't been privy to. They're gods. Kithri and Shara. And they have issued a challenge, which involved kidnapping Jane Foster.
Dun, dun, dun.
In the midst of her struggles as being part of the Congress of Worlds and on Asgard, where she was going to get herself evicted by the new head of things over there, she is now forced into some battle with the Shi'ar gods over who's really a god. You're just this creature who pretends because you hold this hammer. If she doesn't apply herself to the challenge, they'll destroy the earth.
Yep.
That wouldn't be good.
Which is about the time when Jane is, it is now time for the kicking of hindquarters. Because the hammer translates her thoughts into interesting ways. The art is, of course, back to Russell Dauterman, so it is incredible. Mm-hmm. It is cosmic and earthy and lovely Volstagg moments.
Yes.
There's humor in all this to be had. I can't wait to see where this is going forward, seeing more planets. But I don't want to spoil the gag in the first challenge they present her, since Steve hasn't read it. But that was a pretty sweet way to end that. Well, what do you think, Mara?
I loved it. And I keep getting this, and I can't remember, but maybe Matt told me or I read it somewhere, this idea that Jason Aaron wants to be, he wants to have a Simonson-esque Thor run. Massive and unique and amazing, and I think he's well on his way. I definitely love our current Thor. I just got a statue of her last week. It's awesome.
Yes,
it's already up on the shelves. And it's one where every issue that comes out is, it's all good. It's still a lot of fun. It's still fresh. It feels high stakes still. And I'm just enjoying it.
The sales are very strong.
Good.
Still way above what he was doing previously. And he wasn't doing badly with his previous Thor run.
Mm-mm.
The unworthy Thor will begin to tie into this one, by understanding, seeing those solicits. So I think we're having you talk about being Simons's run. That was, if you wanted to put a Thor run to the test and say, okay, this is the one you should read, I'm going to tell you it's Walt Simonson's, despite the fact that I'm a huge fan of what Stan and Jack did, particularly as they got bigger into the mythology as we went. Because initially it was all his secret identity of Don Blake and touch the cane and make the hammer. It was very much Captain Marvel being the Shazam version of it until they went, no, why do we have Thor and Asgard and we're not using it? And they just went for it, and it was spectacular.
Yeah.
But I think Jason Aaron's putting himself in that conversation.
Mm-hmm. So let's take a minute here and talk about those solicits, Bob, that you had brought to our attention.
Yes, those have been announced officially through a number of sources, CBR, Bleeding Cool, all over. I think IGN has it too. And they're solicits for May. And there are some really interesting books being added or continuing, things like the America book. There's a Jean Grey. We have a Secret Warriors coming from Matthew Rosenberg and Javier Garon.
It looks awesome.
Yeah, Quake, Moon Girl, Ms. Marvel, Karnak, Inferno, a lot of interesting characters. There are also tons and tons and tons of Secret Empire books.
Oh, my God.
And the math comes out to be, if you're buying just these Secret Empire books, you'd be in for $55 in May.
Oh!
Wow.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That'll do. Okay.
Yeah. You know, there are some changes. Dennis Hopeless is taking on Doctor Strange with Nico Henrichon, which is going to take some getting used to after the Aaron Bartolo run. We have an Iron Fist book and a Luke Cage book.
Yep.
Luke Cage is David F. Walker, Nelson Blake, but no Power Man Iron Fist.
Correct.
And no Spider-Woman. And no Patsy Walker, no Silk, Scarlet Witch, Squadron Supreme, or Silver Surfer.
Now, I will say this.
Last one might just be on hiatus.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of books.
Mm-hmm. I was on Twitter earlier today, and Kate Leth said that they're ending Hellcat on their terms. So that's good.
No,
it's
on their terms. On their terms.
It's canceled out from under them, but it's
care good if they news. Did it on their terms, but my terms.
Yeah, exactly. My terms.
We don't care about your terms.
The life of Citizen Kane. Yeah.
What about my needs?
Yes.
With a book like Picard, that makes sense. You know, they see what's going on. They're like, you know what? Let's wrap it up. 15, 16, 17 issues. Fine. A book like Power Man and Iron Fist, it doesn't, you know, it's like, hey, that was fun, but we need separate books now. You know, that seems a little bit different.
Yeah.
Books like Where Does Spider-Woman Go? You know, things like that. There's just sometimes, yeah, those like books that have been off to the side and floating and doing, being those sort of like, and the things that we love coming out of Marvel, the indie feeling books, the ones that feel separate from everything else, you know, those aren't sustainable. They're not going to last 50 issues. Mm-mm. Getting 16, 17, 18 issues out of it is great. Awesome. But these other books that are a part of it and do the crossovers and quote unquote play along, where do those go? They just get spun out and canceled or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm happy that some of the things manage the runs they do. Happy that Moon Girl manages to get to an issue 19 and is still out there. And I look through this lineup of books, and there's so many tie-ins, and we have all these new X books and lots of Guardians books. And there's a Rocket book and a Groot book, and I know it's a business.
A baby Groot book.
Yeah. Rocket relaunched as Rocket because I guess they don't want to use Raccoon anymore. I don't know.
All right.
I'm a little concerned that there's some of the – in seeing some of the artwork and some of the – this looking past it, it's seeming more 10 years ago Marvel – than the Marvel over the last five, where things were a little more lighter in character, slightly more diverse. Still lots of interesting characters, a lot of things being tried, but it looks a little different than when you're looking at a lineup that was Veronica Fish doing Silk or something like that, or seeing what, or Red Surfer, or Brittany Williams, Picard, what was happening in Spider-Woman. And speaking personally, I can just say that it looks like my curse has resurfaced. Because I just lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 books I was buying.
Yeah.
In a shot.
Yeah.
Mm. Are you, Bob, will you be replacing those 5 or 6 with anything off the list?
Well, I may or may not continue with Doctor Strange. I will certainly try because I love Dennis Hopeless on Spider-Woman, but I'd much rather read Dennis Hopeless on Spider-Woman and have that continue. I will try Luke Cage because I love what David F. Walker has done, but the solicit for the first issue involves the death of a major, major character from the original Hero for Hire series.
Yeah. Oh, great.
So that puts me off a bit, and it's not a superhero character who has a chance for coming back from the dead. Like a regular person. Yeah. Like Secret Warriors, yeah, I'll give it a shot. I don't know much of Matthew Rosenberg.
4 kids walk into a bank.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm excited for that one.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that and Generation X number 2 from Christina Strain and I'm a Garpina.
There's some really cool names on some of these books. You know, I saw Saladin Ahmed on one of them. You know, it's really cool, different names, people jumping in and coming from like Rosenberg and stuff like that, you know, coming from some of the indie stuff we've been reading. That's cool to see. But some of the, and this happens every time the solicits come out, anytime there's a big event or a big movie that's coming out, you know, like, there's like 12 Guardians of the Galaxy books up here. You know, it's like Guardians of the Galaxy one shot, Guardians of the Galaxy miniseries, Baby Groot series, Rocket yeah. series, all new Star-Lord series. It's like, it's so blatant, you know, in terms of how they're doing this. And it does not feel organic. Some of these books have switched to double shipping, monthly now. Yeah. Do you see that? I wonder where that came from.
Yeah.
But the prices have not changed. You know, it's still $3.99 for these books. And even the thing that we talked about with Resurrection going forward, at this point, we're going to be 3-4 issues into some of these books, X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue. It's just a lot. It's a lot of books. Huh? And they're not really – they're not as grabby as I wish they were.
I will say that the Star Wars books still look appealing to me. But anyway, but no new Star Wars, just the crossover.
So is Monsters Unleashed an ongoing series?
I don't know.
I think it's supposed to be because they're putting two of them out in a month.
So wait, so isn't the thing that's going on right
Kaiju,
now?
Right?
Isn't the thing that's going on right now Monsters Unleashed?
Yes, but this will be the Monsters Unleashed the series.
Oh,
like Spaceballs the series.
Oh, I see. Cool that Ta-Nehisi Coates is still on Black Panther. That's pretty cool.
Yes, but World of Wakanda is canceled.
Yeah, but they have Black Panther and the crew coming through. So there's going to be a second spinoff, which is cool. I like that.
Yeah. Oh, well, lots to change and look forward to. We'll
yeah,
see.
But I will pass on any book that has Cable on the cover with his giant guns and clenched teeth and giant neck. It's like, no, I lived through that once. I don't need to see that some more.
Yeah.
And there was a cover that Steve just went past of, I think it's Spider-Man 16.
Yeah, I think
that has a very, very bendy black cat on it that makes me sort of sick.
Wait, I'm confused. So do you say Dennis Hopeless is on Doctor Strange?
Yes, as of number 21.
Oh, okay. So Doctor Strange number 20 is Jason Aaron's last issue.
Yes, but they're both coming out apparently in May.
Right. I'm shocked that they're doing like 3 issues of Secret Empire back to back to back in May. I'm like, not shocked, but I mean, that's good. Like, that's good scheduling. Like, hopefully we bang that out.
Yeah. And get it out of here. Just be done. Again, lots of extra issues. Maybe you don't have to read them. Maybe you do. Hopefully they'll come out on time.
Maybe.
X-Men's double shipping.
Sure, and since there are 4 of them, they could octuply ship.
X-Men Blue and Gold are double shipping.
Side note, you know what I aggressively did over the weekend, Joey? I purchased Wicked and the Divine Volume 4.
Ooh, girl! What'd you think?
Which means, I haven't read it yet, but that means, it means that I'm one step closer to getting caught up, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to the beginning and I'm going to read the whole damn thing.
Oh. That's bold. That's bold. Yeah.
Nice. It's 'cause the way I got to do it, man. I've been away for too long.
Life goes on. Yep. Life goes on. Get ready. That book is going to blow your mind.
Well, let's continue with some of the indie books we read this past week. Steve, you've got a couple right off the bat that that you wanted to bring up.
Yarp. So we were talking about Kate Leth before.
Mm-hmm.
Spell on Wheels, 5 of 5, the final issue. Excuse me, of this arc. Or this story, rather. And, yeah.
Oh, no. I was that's not helping. I was hoping to be able to
get a
rave and buy a trade.
Here's the story. We've talked about this in the past. Landings are hard to stick. And it all comes down to personal preference. This is a great story. It's filled with great characters. It's got humor throughout. I am not typically one for, I don't know if I want to compare this to anthology stories, but like each issue kind of had its own little thing going for it. Its own little like Scooby-Doo-ish, like Scooby-Doo Meets the Craft kind of thing, where they're going around collecting these magical items that are used for a specific spell.
to keep like the witch's magic alive, and somebody has stolen the ingredients and sold them off to various people, and they have to go and collect them. And some of the people that you meet along the way are nefarious in nature, and others are not, and they're just people that made a mistake, and they turn it into like this weird other tale of stuff going on, and it's all of a sudden this really casual, fun issue where they're at a party and you're just having a good time. And for those moments, it was really good. But like in going around collecting these pieces, we kind of got away from the core of like, we have to come back to the whole reason we went on this trip to begin with. By the end, it's only five issues, so we got to do it now. And I felt like the end, it just kind of flatly ended. Mm-hmm. Like very predictable, or like I got to like the crux of what was going on in the finale, and it was like, well, of course that's what it's going to be and how it's going to work out like that. But I will say this, not really a spoiler, but like, despite that, it ends on a sweet note of them kind of like accepting that they're the ones that need to protect this magic now, and they don't know what other things are going to come about that they're going to have to then road trip out to go and take care of. So I like the idea that it kind of goes out on this note of like, we could be back. We could be go and do the thing that we were doing so well again. I wouldn't say no to a second time around. I just wish that, you know, when you read a finale of something that you're really enjoying, you want it to pop, right? Yes. And I enjoyed the run as a whole, but at the end, I was kind of like, some of the magic was taken away.
Nicely played.
From me. So still a really wonderful story. And if you find the trade, totally worth picking up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I think so. The characters make it. And for like a good like three, maybe even four issues, it's really sweet. And some people might not be bothered by, or might even be surprised by the ending. Like, this is just one person's opinion. Very charming and very reminiscent of, like I mentioned, the Craft before. It's like Craft meets Josie the Pussycats kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that sounds like your bag. Totally check it out. Awesome. Keyleth is very talented, and Megan Levin's artwork is very charming. And Marissa Louise's colors are wonderful. All description words. So, but I read something else too, yeah. You guys. Yeah. Oh my God, I read something that was really good.
Tell us more.
So you might have heard of this little series, little run by Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez called Lock and Key. You guys, anybody?
Yeah. That's real indie right there.
So Lock and Key ended and the world died. And then it was announced that Lock and Key was doing a one-shot called Small World. And it's Joe Hill, Gabriel Rodriguez, and Jay Photos. And this is a one-off story that is set before the proper Locke family from the series that we know. And it's kind of like the family of the family of the family that inherited the keys and has been living in the Locke house and keeping guard over these things. And Small World Key just so happens to work on a dollhouse that is inside the house. And it's strange because the dolls that go to the dollhouse, the inhabitants, are the actual people living in the house. It's the family. So when you use the key, you can open up the dollhouse and you can like listen in on conversations. You can manipulate items and move people around in the house. You can kind of haunt people and do whatever it is that you feel. And it turns out that it's the daughter's birthday. And as a shared gift between the two young ones, they are given the Small World Key, and in a act of jealousy, the younger of the two steals the key, goes to kind of create a little bit of mischief, and winds up leaving the door open, so to speak, and things that otherwise would be harmless in the house get into the actual house and cause a panic and threaten the entire family, and things go horribly wrong.
It is just as good as everything else you know. The art is just as elaborate and incredible as anything you've seen in the series before. If you enjoyed Lock and Key and you didn't pick this up, there's actually now a hardcover version available that I saw the other day at Android's Comics that I kind of really wish that I picked up. And it's got one of the best endings of a comic that I've seen in a while. Just one of those like super cool resolution, really clever, like, of course that's how you're gonna do it, but how epic was that for it to end this way. And it's just a really great addition to that series that if you're a fan, or even if you've never read it before and you're kind of curious about what the whole deal with Lock and Key is, this is actually a pretty good way, seeing as it's a prequel. It doesn't spoil anything for the future, and it'll give you a really, really good taste of what it's like to, you know, get into the series, all new characters, just a horror ride from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. And, I loved it. I loved it. I almost forgot that I bought it, and I didn't pack it on purpose. I kept leaving it out. Cause I was like, come on, man, like you got it. It's just one issue. You can do this. You can handle it. Sit down. So I finally read it and it was wonderful. And spoiler alert, we made a new rule at the end of our award season that anything read after the awards is up for next year's. So
published after, I believe, Action Comics number one from 1938.
No, I'm pretty sure that this was published afterwards, because
pretty sure too.
If I would have definitely put this in my pile to be end of the year stuff if I had seen it. I'm looking for the date. December. There you go. December 2016.
There you go.
Yeah. So we're safe.
See? Yeah, absolutely. You're set.
Nice. You know, one shot category, something like that.
Hmm.
Yep.
All right.
Yes.
Joey, you've got a lot of indie books to bring up this week.
Yeah, I'll blast through them.
Yeah, go. Blast on through.
No, okay. That was good. Two follow-ups to two series that we talked about last month: God Country number two and The Deep number two. God Country from Image kind of swerves away from the grandiosity and explosiveness of the cliffhanger in a subversive sort of way, which is cool. Takes the time to walk us back through some exposition and a pretty awesome like conversation with a god sequence as our main character, Emmett, the sort of grandfather who's suffering from Alzheimer's, is confronted by Aristus, the god of war, who sort of wants his giant sword back. The sword, if you'll remember, gives Emmett back his memory and his cognizance, so he's not about to hand that sucker over. And then the sword starts talking to them and tells them that they have to talk it out. There's no super godly brawls or anything, this issue. So a lot of groundwork, a lot of kind of laying down what the world is. It's a great issue. It's really cool. Gorgeous artwork from Jeff Shaw. It's kind of like a gritty version of Emma Rios, Fiona Staples. It's really cool. I'm really liking this book. It kind of mixes like that gritty Western with gods and fantasy. So it's really cool. And obviously the Alzheimer's angle and the sword and the fact that Emmett is so desperate to kind of hold on to this memory that he's regained is a really great emotional core to it. So that's God Country number two from Image. The Deep number two from Boom, also a great second issue. Love the family dynamic. Love the deep sea explorer stuff. There's some cool, like, ancient underwater stuff that they come across this issue. And I just love seeing a mixed race family taking the lead. I love all of it. Super fun book, The Deep. Buy it. Cool. Awesome. What else did I read? The Forever War number one. So Titan Comics is re-releasing Marvano's 1988 adaptation of Joe Haldeman's Hugo Award-winning novel, The Forever War. Came out in 1974. I actually didn't even discover that this comic book was from 1988 until I was looking up the year for Haldeman's novel, but I'm not surprised by that, because as I was reading this comic book, I was like, man, this totally looks and sounds like a comic from the 1980s. And then it totally was. So it worked out. Like visually, layouts wise, it had super Watchmen, Dark Knight feel to it. And it's got that like cynical terseness too, which is really cool. Yeah, great dystopian, hard sci-fi here. The humans are at war with aliens, but it's like kind of like real life. So it takes forever to space travel. So we've never actually seen the aliens, but we're preparing like hell. So like our narrator, Mandela, is a space marine or space private or something. And this first issue is basically basic training and all the kind of brutalities and why people go to war without any, you know, what goes on the battlefield. It's not all battle all the time. It reminded me of like what Starship Troopers actually was before the schlocky, even though it was awesome film that kind of like totally reverted what Starship Troopers was, the novel I'm talking about. So yeah, Forever Wars is pretty much that sort of commentary on war without taking us to the battlefield, without giant bugs. I mean, at least not yet, I guess. We haven't seen
it. I want giant bugs.
Hey, who knows? They might come. Overall, really cool book from Titan that really reflects the era in which it was written. And it's cool that they're doing these kind of reprints. Titan's doing some cool stuff. They got their properties. Yeah. They got their kind of licensed things. They got a lot of Doctor Who and Sherlock and that. But, you know, they have that Hard Case Crimes coming out. And then they have stuff like this, which is cool to see. And then one graphic novel, Flight of the Raven, which is a work in translation coming out of Euro Comics, partners with IDW. It's through this imprint that a lot of the Corto Maltese stuff is getting reprinted in English with IDW too. But this comic, Flight of the Raven, was published in 2010 by Jean-Pierre Gibrat. And it's been translated here by Diana Schutz and Brandon Kander. Story-wise, we've got a World War II French resistance setting as our protagonist, Jean, gets caught with contraband by a crooked commissioner and has to escape with a roguish cavalier named Francois. after a harrowing escape across the rooftops of Paris, the two team up with a boat captain and his wife and son and try desperately to evade the Nazis and reunite with Jean's sister. That's the plot there. What drew me to this one is the artwork. It's amazing. I'm going to send you guys a picture of the cover right now in the Skype chat.
Okay.
And that's also what the interiors look like.
Oh, I almost read this past week.
Yeah, dude.
It was in my covers of the week.
Oh my God, it's so beautiful. So beautiful. I picked up the book because of that red beret.
Okay.
Dead serious. Jean is dressed in this like green overcoat, patterned skirt, white gloves, a super era, you know, and she has this stark red beret and these piercing blue eyes. And I was like, girl, I'm in. And then I opened the book and the interiors match that. And I was totally blown away. It's like this European naturalism. It's so distinct and so cool. But, the story's great, and I'm a sucker for a French resistance story. I do feel that the translation suffers a bit. I can't tell if it's too direct or too literal. I don't have like the original French version in front of me. But the language doesn't feel natural at points. It feels like they kind of just direct translated it. But as someone who teaches works in translation in English class, I kind of can kind of tell when that happens, and I felt that several times with this book. It is absolutely beautiful though, and it was cool. It was cool to read. I mean, you don't necessarily get to read a lot of books coming from in translation like this. I mean, manga is its own thing, but with the European stuff, you don't necessarily get a lot of that. So it's cool that IDW is doing this, and the story itself is serviced by some really awesome, awesome artwork. Scooter Girl. China Clixton Flores with colors by George Campades and letters by Brian Lee O'Malley and Christopher Butcher. So Image here is recollecting this miniseries and re-releasing it. Originally published in 2003. There's a cool new introduction from Jamie S. Rich in the front that details how awesome the book was and still is, and how awesome China Flores was and still is. She did the Lumberjanes Gotham Academy crossover.
Yep. And also Blue Monday.
Blue Monday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he talks about that in the intro. Basic premise here, we've got a mod scooter culture mashup with some classic rom-com romp. Boy thinks he's the hottest shit going. Tries to beg
Ashton. Boo.
New girl totally owns his sorry ass. Life goes on. Boy can't get over it. Thinks about killing the girl. Super fun. Super cool. Super awesome to look at. Flores's work here channels the 60s pop vibe and the mod setting that she's trying to evoke. She does story and art. Bob, as I'm gleaning from your response, I found the protagonist Ashton super sleazy and a total scumbag. Yes. And I sort of don't like it when scumbags get to be the first person narrator.
Yes.
But Flores at least keeps the tenor of the book light, and the stature of Margaret Sheldon, the object of Ashton's affection, totally elevated throughout. You understand why Ashton is an asshole, even if he doesn't. Lots of Scott Pilgrim vibes here, 10 Things I Hate About You vibes, She's All That vibes, a lot of cool stuff. I had a good time with this book. There were moments where I was like, this Ashton guy is a creep, and I don't want to follow your story anymore. But the artwork is so, so good, and really just kept me going throughout. Bob, you got a chance to read this one?
Sure, absolutely. If there were no words in it and all you wanted to do was look at the pictures, it would probably be worth the money.
Oh, yeah.
As a series of fashion illustrations about it is that mod rocker vibe going on, but it's set in our present, or at least closer to our time. It isn't a 60s piece.
Right. It took me a while to get that, but yeah.
Right. It is definitely those people who still challenge that, you know, or channel that culture. Margaret Sheldon is a really, really fabulous character, even though at one point there's this weird thing that Ashton hears from his grandfather about why everything is happening the way it is. I'll just leave that out there. Really enjoyed the ebb and flow of the story. Thought Ashton was a complete jerk, loser, slime ball, you name it. He gets his comeuppance more than once at the hands of Margaret, and how he has slept with every woman in school. And I guess is it high school or university?
Both.
Okay. Yeah. Once he moves down to San Diego and so on, it is fun to watch as she gets them all to compare notes, and he gets his comeuppance. I don't want to spoil anything. My one real quibble with the book is not as much as following this bad guy around, because he does have to address what it was that went wrong. And it seems like he's trying to be better, and then it's instantly he's not.
Yeah.
And it comes back around to that. We get sort of a meet-cute ending.
Yeah, totally.
That does not seem that something Margaret would do.
Yeah, I feel like, and in the intro, Rich talks about the challenge with this book was Flores was doing Blue Monday, and that was an ongoing, and she had this pitch for Scooter Girl, and he was like, hey, let's do a mini series instead of an ongoing, because you're busy with all this other stuff. So I agree with you. I was kind of taken aback by the happy ending, quote unquote, if you will. Cause I wanted this punk to just go down and just like stay down, you know, especially because there's an issue where the whole gag of the issue is he's like, I'm going to kill her. That's my solution, you know? And it's like, you don't come back from that. Like, and again, this is kind of what I was saying before, but like, I was laughing genuinely reading this book. So, and it was fun and it was light even through some of those more twisted moments. So I forgave it a lot of its kind of easy outs, if you will, with some of the characters and some of the way that the story resolves. But it's cool, and it's one of those like gems that I'm glad Image is reprinting.
Absolutely,
and with this kind of stuff.
I mean, I think I recall seeing the covers at some point and just never bothered at the time, never investigated further. So that we got a chance to read it, I'm very glad you brought it up.
Oh yeah,
in Jamie Rich's intro, he does talk about having to get this story finished in 6 issues. if for the sake of it, I mean, this is just us because I'm sorry for everyone else who didn't read this. Hopefully I'm not spoiling too much. The Kitty Drake subplot.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't really go a whole lot of places. You pulled that out and given us more Ashton Margaret. It might, the ending might not feel as rushed.
Right.
Again, that said, I think I need to own this. Just to be able to pull it off the shelf and flip through it to those moments of absolute hysterical stuff going on that is also heartfelt. They're real people acting in goofy ways. Totally. And that's the best kind of comedy.
All right. Speaking of goofy things, Angel Capper.
Okay.
Oh, you gotta say it. Angel Capper!
I can't pull that off, Joey. I just can't pull that off.
Margaret Atwood, Johnny Christmas, and Tamra Bovilo. Dream team right here. Mara, did you read it?
I did, and it was just as strange as the first one.
Cagula, not for Kitty.
Yeah. It's fun. It's just a odd concept, and you have to buy into it in order to enjoy it. And
yeah,
I mean, you just know what you're getting into in the first couple of pages of the first volume and just run with it, and it's okay. I liked that this one introduced more of the birds and that aspect of cat bird. And you know, it's just kind of a fun, quick one. It had the cat facts as well, and yeah, I mean, it's just a strange book.
It's a strange book for strange folks by some strange folks. And I love it so much. The one thing I liked about this book was nothing happens in this book, volume two.
Right.
Like, volume one was just like everything happens. Volume two is just like the cats and the birds are walking through the forest trying to get to Count Catula's castle. And they're just like, tell us a story. And then, okay, and they just tell stories about cats turning into bat cats and bird cats, and there's like a little orphan cat. Aww. And it's the saddest little scene in the whole little book, and it's so sad. And then at the end, it's Lady Cat Power and Lady Bird Power.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool.
It's one of those books where I'm like, how long is this taking? How much time is passing in these 100 or so pages?
10 minutes.
I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an interesting one, and I'm looking forward to what they do with volume three now.
Never, Angel Catbird will never end. I will read it forever.
And then I wanted to hit on Sex Criminals number 16, real quick.
Nice. It's back.
Did anyone else read it? Or
I read about half of it, and I will say that when I went to the shop, I was like, I already picked up Wicked and Divine. And then I looked closer, and it was a freaking Sex Criminals variant cover or whatever. And I was like, wait a minute. Don't, first of all, tease me with another Wicked and Divine book.
Not fair.
And two, it's freaking Sex Criminals is back. I don't remember what happened.
Well, luckily, they give you quite everything. A few pages of recap. A lot of pages, actually. And some of the stuff where I'm like, oh, yeah, I did totally forget that that happened.
Is it like 8 pages?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's extensive. So you're definitely caught up by the time you get to the end of it. And then they just jump in. And I think they're very aware that they are not consistent with the book. Yeah. That they took quite a bit of time off, and hopefully they are going to be more consistent moving forward.
I doubt it.
I'm going to be optimistic about it. This issue just kind of deepened that relationship between John and Susie. You know, Susie wants to build future plans, and John still has his issues. These past couple issues, he just seems kind of angry and mad and upset, and things are spiraling out of his control, and he doesn't know how to handle it. But Susie is a planner. She tackles the problem, goes at it, and she sees this low self-esteem in John, and she wants to build him up, but he has to let her build him up. So yeah, a book about, you know, dildos and orgasms. It's pretty deep relationship stuff in it.
Oh my God.
Yes, yes. It was enjoyable. I'm glad it's back. I hope it stays back. I'm looking forward to more of it now that I'm caught up.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's about it. Sex Friends.
I'll read it.
Yeah.
It's always a good book, and it's funny, and Fractions and Darsky are two of the best, you know? It's just, I literally was almost mad when it was on my pile. I was like, ah, this fucking book again. You know, but it's cool. Yeah.
I'm totally down if it's going to be coming out. Like, even if it was bi-monthly, like it was for that little while, mm-hmm. just let us know when you think it's gonna get, but then that gets into shady territory. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like with the relaunch of Rat Queens that's coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hesitant to go back to it because I remember how much I loved it, but I've been shaken by the absence.
Yeah.
And I need to know that you're not going to tease me with something and then it's going to be another 4 to 5 months before we see another one.
Right. Like, if you're going to do separate arcs, you can push it aside and say, okay, I can pick it up again because it's a new story with the other characters.
Right.
Right.
But if it's continued, but six or eight months in between, look at Hawkeye, which the new Hawkeye came out before the old one ended.
Classic. Right. That book was awesome, though. But
yes, it was.
Sex Criminals 17 is solicited for next month.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Okay, cool.
And then 18 is scheduled for April 19th. So it is right. At least the next three issues
that's cool. That's actually really exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way to go, Matt. Way to go, Chip.
That's awesome. Woo-hoo. That's good news.
The issue before that was April 27th, 2016.
Is this an Archie book like Afterlife with Archie or Sabrina?
Hey, I will say Peter Panzerfaust between issue 23 and 24 was like 2 years. So,
apparently, pulling this all full circle to the first book we talked about, Sex Criminals number 17, next month has a special, I'll read this from the solicit, a special sequence guest colored by a mystery colorist whose name rhymes exactly with Elizabeth Breitweiser.
Nice. That's pretty exciting.
Full circle.
Yeah. Here we are. So that's going to be it for this week's Talking Comics. As always, you can send us comments or questions.
Go ahead, Mara. Sorry.
Okay. Through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We're also on Twitter @talkingcomics. Definitely check out talkingcomicbooks.com for all of our articles and reviews and columns and things like that, as well as our sister podcasts, including Talking Movies, which we mentioned at the top of the show, Talking Games, Talking Valiant, just talking everything. D&D podcast, Top Shelf. Do we have a return date for that one?
Nope.
Okay. Keep reading, guys.
it's going to happen. I'm totally not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
But we are talking about it behind the scenes. And when we do come back, we'll be coming back with a plan and another show to announce after that. We'll get back to it.
It's second season. You're taking a season.
Yeah.
Break.
Yes. I mean, it's the mid-season break. We've
rescheduled
it like 4 or 5 times. Mm-hmm. It's been really rough. In the laundry list of life events that I have going on right now, I cannot handle locking myself down for another podcast with where I'm going to be jet setting for the next few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. You're up in the air basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi Val. Legendary Aww. Runs next week is Dan Slott's She-Hulk series.
Oh, that was a fun one.
Yeah. I'm halfway through it right now, so I'm just chugging along, loving it. That show comes out on Mondays now because of our schedules. We can't record during the week. So look for those on Monday morning every other week. Steve, where can our listeners find you?
If you want to get in touch with me, you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is @dead_anchoress.
And Joey?
@JoeyRuccino.
And Bob?
Well, I'm going to digress. just for a second.
Okay.
I knew this was coming.
Because where you can find me right now, I'm sitting in Steve's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be the last time we record here together.
This is true.
And so it's a little bit emotional. You know, we've done a lot of shows sitting in the same room together over 5 years.
Yeah.
And we'll still be recording and we'll still be together, but not sharing the same space.
No.
And we'll see what the next few weeks bring. We still don't know exactly how that's going to play out, but I'm a little misty.
I'm going to rent some studio space.
Yes. Figure it out. We have to run someone over and say, look, we're bogarting this room and we're doing it.
It's not easy to find a place to podcast. Like, you gotta, especially if there are other people around, you know, like they don't know the deal. Like, I'm going back to my mom's for 3.5 weeks. They're certainly not gonna. She'll probably come in and ask us if we want anything. Like, right in the middle of recording. You know,
here's a cupcake. Have a cupcake.
Yeah, but. Yeah, I've been here for 11 years at the end of this month. I've been here. There's a lot of parties, a lot of stories, and a lot of ghosts in this place. And I am totally ready to move on. My place is more or less packed up. We got this weekend coming up where we're going to move the bulk of the stuff. And it's off to my mom's for about 3 weeks just to save some money for the month. And then... yeah, the 24th. So like a month from now, I'm going to be carting my ass off to Byron, London, Ontario.
Yeah.
So nice. For the record, because I should probably have a record of this, I will still be a resident of New York State. Understand that I am moving my possessions, not my residence, to Canada yet.
Because America.
Right. And I still have to, well, because of health coverage, because of disability, because of now things that I have going on in terms of treatments and follow-ups to what happened a few weeks ago. And I have business, you know, like I have stuff that I need to take care of here. And until I gain full citizenship, you know.
Yeah, you'll be back and forth.
Yeah, that paperwork takes time to process. It's going to be at least 2 years.
Wow.
So, you know, I'll just be taking lengthy stays and vacations, you know, to be with my wife in our new home. And I'll do like a video walkthrough of it when we get there and everything so you guys can see it. And oh, my God, it's huge. It's so amazing. Oh. I can't wait to decorate the crap out of it.
Sounds exciting.
But I'm sorry, Bob. I kind of took the spotlight away.
No, all good.
But yes, just bear with me for 1 second, Mara. I will say something for Bob. It has been, Bob and I are going to find a way to podcast together. And whenever I'm in New York and we're podcasting, we will always podcast together. But from me to you, it has been an honor to share the same space with you for so many years and do what we do. And all the time we spend before we start recording to the time you spend after we're done. And I have appreciated, this is one of the chief things that I will miss the most about living here in New York, is being able to be here with you on Tuesday nights. So,
amen.
From me to you, it has been an honor and a privilege, sir. There you go. So happy notes.
Very good. Very good. And with that being said, you can also find me on Twitter.
Hard sick.
Yes. at Mega Maramon. So for Bob.
Good being with you, Steve.
Indeed.
Steve.
See you next time, everybody.
And Joey.
I like these emotional endings.
I'm Mara Wood. Until next time, to be continued.